As Emerson has said, if God had wanted marriage to be complex, he would probably put 1,000 pages past maps in the back of our Bibles. So when you've got this problem, you go to this page. And when you've got this problem, you go to that page. But instead, he brought it down to two simple words. And guess what? You only have to remember one of them. For you men, it's the word love. And for you women, it's the word respect. And when you begin putting that into your vocabulary, it makes a huge difference in your relationship. Just saying, I love, or I respect, or that felt unloving, that felt disrespectful. Did I come across as unloving? Did I come across as disrespectful? You're speaking your spouse's mother tongue, and it makes a difference. One of the most common responses we get to this message is, it is so simple. Another response we get is from women, why hasn't anyone told us this? And the response we get from men is, finally, somebody's put into words what I felt, but I didn't know how to express. This list that you have in front of you came as a result of us surveying men and women in private homes when we first began this ministry. And this is what the men and women said over and over and over again. See if it fits. I'm assuming it will because men said it and women said it, and that's who we have here today. Emerson and I are not here because of examples that we had growing up. As he mentioned, his parents were divorced and remarried, for which we're very grateful. And if I had time to tell you about the divorce in my family, you would think it was an epidemic. But we're here because we've made a choice to obey, a choice to obey God's word. And it's a choice that we have to continue to make on a daily basis. Since 1973, we've been getting on the crazy cycle just like you do. How else could we practice what we preach? We're not here to get you off the crazy cycle completely. We're all sinners, but we're here to help you recognize when you're on it so that you can jump off sooner and that you can reduce the number of times that you spend on it. It's so freeing when you realize that no relationship is perfect. As Emerson has quoted that verse, if we get married, we've not sinned, but we will have trouble. But we do need to add a little humor to conflict that's bound to happen. We have some friends who have been to this conference 6 or 7 times. They now consider themselves groupies, and we consider them groupies. But they have said that they've entered some phrases in their relationship, such as, excuse me, but you're stepping on my air hose? Or, fasten your seatbelts, we're getting on the crazy cycle. So it does just add a lightness to that conflict that, as I said, is bound to happen, and as God's word says this is going to happen. So just listen as we go through these practical and simple things. And these are what you can do towards your spouse. And as difficult as this is, I am asking you to just focus on what you can do towards your spouse, not what you hope they will do towards you. It's so freeing when we get our mind and our heart off of ourselves and onto that other person. This is a simple message. We believe it takes some simple work, but we are convinced it works. And we wish that you could read the emails that we have continued to receive on a daily basis. And one of the things that keeps coming through these emails is people saying, it's like a light bulb has come on. And I'm reminded of that verse that says, as your words are taught, they give light. They give understanding to the simple. Oh, wow. Everyone says it's a simple message. And a light bulb's coming on, and that's what God's word does when we take it to heart. As I said, I'm excited and I'm enthused, mainly because I'm practicing it in my own life. When I put on respect in action or in words towards my husband or towards my sons, it works. And when I don't, it doesn't work. When Emerson puts on acts of love or words of love towards me, it affects my spirit positively. That's all there is to it. The question becomes, will I do what God has commanded me, independent of what my husband does? Will I believe that verse in the Bible that says, his commands are not burdensome? Men and women, this is a command in Ephesians 5:33. There's no option here. There's no neutrality. We either will obey or we won't obey. And I'm deeply burdened today that many people are not obeying God's commands. You know, as parents, we give our children instruction because we want to spare them pain. We know what we feel is best for them. We want to spare them pain that will come from us personally when they disobey, or from outside circumstances that will come to them when they disobey. And it's the same way with God. He gives us commands to spare us pain. He didn't intend this to be complex. He wanted to keep us from being burdened. Also, I'm excited and enthused about this because I love God. I have a fear of Him, I have a reverence for Him, and I want His blessing in my life. And I trust that you do too. This is a commitment and a decision I've decided to do as unto Him, and I pray that you will also. The Bible says, he who sows righteousness reaps a sure reward. This is the right way to live, and God will reward us. And you will hear more about that in the last cycle, as Emerson shares. And the rewarded cycle is really why we're doing what we're doing. That's what wraps it all up. And I think you'll see why when you hear that. But ask yourself if you're doing what you're doing is presently working. If it's not, then take some of these things and try them. And I think you will see that they do work. They're simple, they're powerful, but it does work and it will be rewarding. Hopefully you're going to see the balance too that God intended in marriage. I think it's very interesting that God was into equality long before the culture was. And do you know how many times I've been through this conference? I've been through this conference a lot. And I'm just continued. I was weeping this morning as Emerson was speaking. I just think, Lord, you knew what you were talking about, if we will just listen. God is speaking truth to us. And our prayer for you, as has been since we began this ministry, is 1 Thessalonians 2:13, that you would receive this not as the word of man, but as the very word of God, which is able to perform its work in you who believe. So let's get started. Men, I'm going to start with you and share with you what the women said. Men, this is all that you're responsible for. Is the things that we're about to listen to from the women that said these over and over. Under the area of closeness, a woman feels close to you, meaning face to face and heart to heart, and therefore feels loved when you hold her hand. Remember when you were dating, you loved to take her hand. You loved to go on a walk and hold her hand or at the movies. Well, think back on those things that you love to do. Those are still important today. When you hug her, I like to share that in the last 4 years, Emerson and I lost both of our mothers within an 11-month period. And I was very close to both of these women, and I would find myself oftentimes just sobbing. And Emerson, if he was nearby and heard me, he would come and he would just hug me. And he didn't say anything, and he would hold me until I was done crying, and then he would leave. And I remember one day thinking, I feel so loved just from him hugging me. Next, when you're affectionate without sexual intentions. Let me repeat this. When you're affectionate without sexual intentions. Do you know it's been said that sexual intimacy begins at breakfast? This is one of the ways that it does. When you do those affectionate things without sexual intentions. Next, openness. A woman feels an openness with you, meaning you aren't secretly mad at her, and therefore feels loved when you share your feelings. Now, men, we know that you will never share your feelings as much as we do, but when you do, we do feel an openness there. When you tell her about your day, if you're burdened, just reassure her that it doesn't have to do with her and that perhaps after you unwind or you have some time to think it through that you might share with her just something so that she is reassured. Next, talk without harshness, guardedness, or grunting. And might I add, no newspaper, no computer, or no TV when you are talking, as that's when grunting occurs the most. And in the area of harshness, I think oftentimes men, because they can banter with one another and, use tones with other men that men don't personalize, if you see your wife's spirit deflate in a conversation, that might be a clue that perhaps you were just a bit on the harsh side. So just watch for that. And ask yourself how you want your future son-in-law to speak to your daughter. That's just a really good test to always kind of keep checking on. Understanding. A woman feels understood or that you empathize with her and therefore feels loved when you listen to her. As Emerson mentioned, he will say to me, do you need me to listen or do you need a solution? And that has just alleviated so much unnecessary misunderstanding and conflict in our relationship. I thought it was interesting that last year our oldest son Jonathan gave the set of CDs to a friend who had been dating a young woman for a couple years. A couple weeks after he had these CDs, he called Jonathan, he said, Jonathan, he goes, I listened to those CDs by your dad. He nails that. He goes, in fact, the other day my girlfriend called and she had some problem and I started to give her a solution, but then I thought, no. And I said to her, do you need me to listen or do you need a solution? He goes, it worked. And then he must have really thought it was going to work, because a couple weeks later he asked her to marry him, and this summer they did get married. So, yes. Next, repeat back what she sometimes says so she knows you are listening. Now, you know Emerson's rendition of spider webbing. Well, he does that so well because he's lived with me for so long. I will take the credit there. In fact, I really think I'm the queen of spider webbing. I thought I was until some man came up to me last year in North Carolina and said, "I'm sorry, my wife's the queen." So maybe we could have a contest even here today. But I'm still learning in this whole area of telling stories to my husband or my sons. And in fact, I was talking to Emerson one day and I saw this kind of glaze come over his eyes and I said, "Honey, I don't think you're listening to me." And he kind of came to and he said, "Well, Sarah, maybe if ever so often you took a breath." He said it very lovingly, and I thought, you know what? I really do need to keep these shorter versions for my girlfriends, for my sons and my husband, and save the longer version for my girlfriends. I mean, even just recently, one of my sons said, "Mom, keep it short," as I was starting to tell something. So I'm still working on it, and they're patient with me. Next, express appreciation for her contribution and her different roles she plays by saying, "I couldn't do your job." And as a stay-at-home mom for those many years, I'll never forget, on one of many days when I felt like a failure as a mother, Emerson said to me, "Sarah, I couldn't do your job. If I had your job, I'd be in prison." I was so excited. Not that he would go to prison, but that I felt so understood. I mean, really, we call that negative encouragement, but I was very encouraged when he said that. I had a friend who one day received a card from her husband listing 12 to 15 menial tasks that she does in the home and outside the home. And like from doing the laundry to taking the kids to school to doctor's appointments to homework, school committees, whatever. He listed these things. She was so blessed. She goes, "I'm going to stick this in my Bible and I'm going to read it on a regular basis." She felt so understood. I mean, it was just a simple thing. He sat down and he listed those things and he thanked her for them. Peacemaking. A woman feels at peace, meaning issues are resolved, and therefore feels loved when you admit when you are wrong and apologize by saying, "I am sorry," which really is a turn-on to a woman, as Emerson mentioned. And an even greater turn-on is when you add the phrase, "Will you forgive me?" And might I just challenge you single men that are here, you could practice with your mothers. I know recently David was in our home and he couldn't find his glasses and he came to the door of the bathroom. I was putting on my makeup and he goes, "Mom, do you know where did you put my glasses?" And I said, "Oh, I don't think I've seen them." And he goes, "Well, I think you must have, because they're not where I left them." And he was just a little, just a little on the edge. Not bad, but I could tell he was sure that I had moved these glasses. So he left and I just said, "Lord, show him where those glasses are. I'm positive I haven't seen those glasses." He came back about 5 minutes later, had this little smile on his face. He goes, "I found the glasses in my golf bag." And then he looked at me and he said, "Mom," he said, "I'm sorry, I came across as unloving. Will you forgive me?" I said, "Yeah." That was so exciting. And so anyway, that's why I say, single guys, you can be practicing on your mothers. Next, keep the relationship up to date, resolve the unresolved, and don't say forget it. Who do we most often hear saying, "I'm sorry"? Little girls or little boys? Well, I'm sure you would all agree with me, little girls. They say, "I'm sorry," when they trip over the dog. And little boys can go at one another. My boys I thought they were killing each other most of the time when they would get into their skirmishes. And if I could get there fast enough, I would have them resolve it, say they're sorry. But so often they lasted such a short amount of time, I didn't get there in time. And when I did get there, they were in the backyard playing together. And I thought to myself, did I just hear what I thought I just heard? And one day I was standing in my kitchen and I realized they were not personalizing that. There didn't seem to be any root of bitterness between them. They didn't have this big, "I'm sorry, will you forgive me?" And I was like, oh my word. Okay, so now, guess what? Little boys and little girls grow up and get married. And guess who most often is saying, "I'm sorry," and who most often is forgetting it and moving on? As a pastor's wife of almost 20 years, I cannot tell you the number of times that I had women say to me, "If I could just hear my husband say, 'I'm sorry.'" And I would wonder, well, why wouldn't they? And then it hit me. We've been doing this since we were children. Is one of us wrong, or are we just different? Well, men, we get historical. I didn't say hysterical. Yes, we do that. But we get historical because we think issues are unresolved. And even though many of those issues are probably not important to you, I would just say to you, if you see the wife, your wife's spirit deflate in the midst of a conversation, like I mentioned about the harshness, or just in when you're discussing something and it's escalating, I would just say to you, that's probably one of those issues that needs to be resolved. So whether it's a small issue or whether it's a large issue, you can just say something simple like, did I come across as unloving? Or I think I came across as unloving. Will you forgive me? I'm sorry. Men, all I can say to you is, it works. And I think we need to give each other the freedom. Now I'm speaking to both of us. I think women need the freedom to say that felt unloving. And I think men need the freedom to say that felt disrespectful. And if we begin to do that, I think there can just be easy healing come about. Men, let me ask you this. How do you want your son-in-law, who's married to your daughter today, or your future son-in-law, to treat your daughter? Ask yourself, am I doing to my wife right now what I would welcome my future son-in-law to do to my daughter? Women, when they come to us and seek our forgiveness, the question is, could we forget it? Could we move on? Could your husband trust your heart that if he did that you would not get historical? I love Proverbs 31 that says, the heart of her husband trusts in her. Might your husband be able to trust that if he sought your forgiveness, whether a little issue or a big issue, that you would drop it, that you would forget it, that you would move on. Next, pray after a hurtful time. This is a simple form of spiritual leadership, but it can be huge. Men, we're not asking you to have an hour-long Bible study with us every day, but we love that leadership when you would say, let's just pray about this, whether it's a hurtful time or whether it's just an issue in the family or something that's happening in your relationship. Under the area of loyalty, a woman feels your loyalty, meaning you are completely committed and therefore feels loved when you don't look at other women. Job did make a covenant with his eyes, and men, if you've never done that, I would challenge you today to make a commitment to do that. That you would make yourself accountable to another man, or you would tell your wife that you have decided that you are going to make a covenant with your eyes. Another thing under this area of loyalty is that I've noticed many men in the culture and in the church do not wear wedding rings. And I ask about three friends who have great relationships with three of my dear friends why they didn't wear their wedding rings. And this is what I got. I've gained a little weight over the years because of my job and because of intramural sports. So I challenge these men that wedding rings, I've noticed, don't cost a whole lot of money. A lot of money. So if you need a couple sizes for that weight gain, weight loss, hey. Or if you need to put it on and take it off because of your job, it really is a sign of loyalty in our culture. And in fact, recently I was watching a sports channel and I saw two well-known sportscasters with wedding rings on, really flashing to the whole world that they were committed to their wives. Now, can I prove that they are? No, I can't. But it was making a statement, and I had an awful lot of respect when I saw that. Also, I had a man come up to me at a conference last year in Arizona, and he had watched the DVDs prior to coming to the conference, and he said, after hearing you say that about the wedding ring, I went and put on my wedding ring that I had not had on for 40 years. I said, yes. I was so excited. Next, speak only positive things about her before family and friends. No airing of dirty laundry, never. Do not bring up the D word, meaning divorce. Men, if you use this as a club, I would say to you as a man of honor, there are certain things you just do not say, but are committed till death do us part. I have many stories that I could share with you at this point about loyalty, and one that I just heard this past summer when I was at a wedding. A woman was telling me about her mother-in-law and father-in-law who have been married for 60 years, and she told me this story that after they'd been married for 50 years, the wife had a stroke. She was in 3 months of rehabilitation, and then she came home. She was almost in a coma. She didn't recognize anyone, and she was in a vegetative state. She was sitting there. Her hair was messy. She had osteoporosis. Her mouth was drooling, and she was in the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. Across the room sat her husband of 50 years, and he looked at her, and he said, "For better, for worse, for richer, for poor, in sickness and in health. Well, Rainey, here we go." Now fast forward 10 years. That man has pancreatic cancer. Recently, he went for one of his treatments, and this dear daughter-in-law came over to stay with her mother-in-law. And while she was there, she gave her a bath, she fixed her hair, she put a little blush and lipstick on her, and she put on a pretty sweater. Then her father-in-law came home from his treatment. He walked in the house, and his daughter-in-law said, "Take a look." And he looked at her, and with tears streaming down his face, he said, "Rainey, you look beautiful." And then he said to his daughter-in-law, "Go get a mirror so she can see how pretty she looks." Men, I would just ask you, are you unconditionally loving your wife now so that if circumstances like this happened, that you could say, "Yes, I could love her through sickness and in health"? Little insert here, women. Ask yourself, would my husband find it a joy to take care of me if this happened to me? Am I living my life in such a way in my home that he could find, still see what he married years ago? Think about those things. Okay, esteem. A woman feels esteemed that you treasure her above all others and therefore feels loved when you verbally support and honor her in front of the children or anyone. For example, Emerson was always so appreciative of my cooking through the years, and even though when my boys were younger, they weren't as expressive, I was encouraged when I received an email from a friend who said that our son David had been in their home a few times, and she said, "We always love having David in our home because he's always so appreciative of everything." And as soon as I read that, I thought to myself, he had a wonderful example in his dad, who was always so expressive about things, whether it was food or anything that I was doing around the home. And those things, that woman felt very esteemed, and it came back to bless me. But just that, those simple things of being that example before your children. Next, praise her for what she does, whether in the home or outside the home. I was at another wedding recently where my friend from college, her daughter was getting married, and her husband's a pastor, and he was performing the ceremony. And in the middle of the ceremony, he looked at his daughter, and he said, "Christy, I just want to say one thing to you, that there will be many times throughout your married life that you will find it very difficult to respect Oliver. And when those times happen, I just have one suggestion. Call your mom and ask her what she did." Wow. Everyone turned around, or Christy turned around and looked at her mom, and everyone was deeply touched by those words. Now, men, I suppose that the majority of you are not pastors here, and you will not have the privilege of marrying your daughter and speaking those things publicly. But how wonderful if you would express that to your daughter along the way as she's growing up, or prior to her getting married. Now, again, women, if you are sitting here thinking, "My husband couldn't say that to our daughter," just begin again. It's always a new day. Value her opinion in the gray areas, remembering she may not be wrong from you, but just different from you. This is often where a woman feels disrespected. I have a friend who works in her husband's law office, and a couple years ago, she wrote this in her Christmas letter. "Watching Steve in trial has provided a whole new appreciation for someone who has reached the top of their field of law. He always values my opinion and runs his arguments for trial by me." And I thought she used that phrase, "values my opinion." I thought she obviously feels esteemed and therefore loved, but he obviously feels a lot of respect from this woman, or he wouldn't dare to go there with his arguments. Men, because you're so bottom line, especially with another man is in this area of opinion, you know, you would say to your buddy, "Oh, that stinks," or, "Well, I don't agree with that." Somehow when you say that to your wife, it has a different effect. So I was thinking how I could help you just with a few different ways of saying to your wife if you knew you didn't agree with her opinion or you thought you didn't agree with her opinion. First of all, you could just start by saying thank you for sharing your opinion. Or you could say, let me think about that, which shows you're processing her ideas. Or lastly, even though I don't feel the same way as you, I value your heart, and I value your opinion, and I trust your heart. Men, the way you word yourself in the tone of voice, just as with us, with you, makes all the difference. Men, that's all you're responsible for. That's what those women said over and over and over again. And of course, it's going to vary from person to person and culture to culture, but I would just say to you, ask your wife, would these things make you feel loved? Maybe she would delete some of them, maybe she would add some. Most of all, just begin trying some of them, and she'll be thrilled either way. Now, women, what I'm about to share with you may feel foreign, but it's not alien to your husband. It is his mother tongue, and we do need to be informed of this. I am burdened today that many women think marriage is all about them. And if their needs are met, we'll all be happy. And the reason I say that is because I think I was guilty of that for so many years. But since the divorce rate is increasing and not decreasing, something must be missing. And I think, wouldn't it be exciting if we discovered that missing ingredient and we were instrumental in helping decrease the divorce rate? You know, women want power and influence. We hear it in the news. We hear it everywhere. I think, wow, what a way to have power and influence, but to be biblical. I can't think of any other way better to be powerful and influential. We wrote those books, Motivating Your Man God's Way, because so many women were saying to us, what does respect look like? And it's helped so many women, and I was so encouraged when I got a call from a woman a few months back when she had discovered this book, and she shared with me her story. She told me that a couple years ago, her husband had been caught in multiple acts of immorality, and they had been in Christian counseling for 20 months. And she said to me, in those 20 months of Christian counseling, no one ever shared with me the words unconditional respect. She said, even though my husband had grown spiritually during that time, no one challenged me with unconditional respect. She said, this has really changed our lives, and it's changed our marriage. And she said, she had this really cute accent, and she was just getting so excited as she's on the phone, and she goes, the other day, she said, I just can be so venomous with my words, and that's what I just had to keep working on. And as I would read about this unconditional respect, I think, yes, you can say what you need to say, but you don't have to crush his spirit. And so she said, I was so upset with him about something, and I was just ready to just be like I'd always been. And then I thought, no, I can be respectful, I can be truthful. And so I did. I came into the room, and I just said what I needed to say, and then I walked out of the room. A few minutes later, he followed me into the other room, and he began loving on me. And then he said, Angela, you remembered the book. And she said, how did you know? He said, I heard it in your voice. I thought, whoa, that was pretty powerful. Well, this is what the men said over and over again, this list that you have before you. But because men are not as expressive, responsive as we are women, they're not going to keep telling us. They don't talk as much as we do. But if this is what they're feeling, then we need to sit up and listen. Women, God made them with these needs, just as he made you with the needs that we just spoke about. The Almighty God made your husband. He didn't make him wrong. He just made him different. And when we learn to unconditionally respect them for who they are, created in the image of God, we will realize they're not wrong. They're not less than us. They're just different than us. I'm reminded of a few years ago when I was meeting with some high school girls for 2 years on Wednesday mornings at 7 o'clock. At the end of my time with them was just when we were beginning this ministry. And I wanted to share some of this love and respect with them and just kind of give them an idea of what we were launching. And so one day I said to them, girls, tell me what you hate about men. They gave me a list of 20 things you'd have thought they'd been married for 20 years. And then I said, okay, now tell me what you love about being a woman. And they told all these glowing things about us. And then the next week I came back and I said, okay, girls, now tell me what you respect and admire about men. I was so blown away by their insight, again, into men. I couldn't believe they were 17 and 18 years of age. And then I said, now tell me what you hate about being a woman. And they told all those ugly things about us. And then I said, girls, tell me, what do you feel this week in comparison to what you felt last week? And one 18-year-old girl raised her hand and she said, Mrs. Eggerich, last week I thought we were the better species. This week I realized neither one of us is wrong. We're just different. I said, girls, if you get this down now and God chooses marriage for you, you will have a very satisfying and fulfilling life. So I was blessed by that, and I'm always reminded of that story. Okay, let's look at what the men said. Women, this is what you're responsible for. And again, if you can just get your mind and heart on how you can meet the needs of your husband, just as we challenged him to meet your needs, you really, things can be good. Under the area of conquest, a man feels you are appreciating his pursuits or his desire to work and achieve and therefore feels your respect when you tell him thanks for going to work every day. Now, does that mean every day you go, thank you for going to work today, thank you for going to work today? No, too much cake makes anybody sick. But ever so often, we have women say to us, well, I've thought that, but I've just never said it. You know, it'd be kind of like men saying, you know, I think about telling her I love her, I just don't get around to it. I had a friend who came to this conference by herself at the last minute because her husband, who worked at the university, was writing a grant proposal, and something happened, and it was crunch time. So she came because she wanted to learn about respect. After the conference was over, she thought, okay, how could I implement this into my life, especially these next 2 weeks where it's going to be more intense with this proposal. So she thought, well, she would start by not being negative. That was a really good place to start. And she wouldn't ask him to do the things that he normally did to help her. And so also we had, you cannot relate to this, but we had two major snowstorms in those 2 weeks and she shoveled the driveway. At the end of that time, this is the friend who received the card from her husband thanking her for the 12 to 15 things that she does inside the home and outside the home. Now in this case, she did get flowers. Now women, you will not always get flowers. But I am convinced you will see him do something to serve. Men serve and they die. Hopefully he'll just serve. He wouldn't have to die. But again, how do you want your future daughter-in-law or the daughter-in-law who's married to your son today to treat him in this area of his work efforts? I'm sure you will want her to support him. And my friend was a great example here. Next, cheer his successes, whether in business or sports. Remember in high school, you were there cheering someone on, whether it's the guy beside you or it was the whole team. We love to be cheerleaders. My husband does such a good job, doesn't he, of being a seventh grade cheerleader? But whether it's in business, whether it's in sports, whatever, they want us to cheer them on. We have a friend in New York who had owned his own business, and he had dreamed of being bought out someday. And that day finally came. And he could hardly wait to get home and tell his wife. And when he came, she was a little preoccupied, but he said, honey, guess what? And she said, oh, what? And he said, I have great news. It's finally happened. They're gonna buy us out. And she said, oh, that's great. And she kept on walking and doing what she was doing. He said to Emerson, I felt so disrespected and dishonored that I decided that day I would never share with her again. I thought, ooh, that's pretty serious. If we don't cheer their successes, will we be there when they fail? Over the years of being a pastor, Emerson would, in his marriage ceremonies, would say to the wife and husband three things that they could do to show love and respect. And one of the ways that he would tell the bride to show respect, he would say to her, you be that cheerleader that when the whole world walks out on him, you come in cheering him on. I always loved that word picture. I thought it just captured what God really has created us as women to be. And I think of a friend who has been a cheerleader in her husband's life. He had a dream, and he lived it out a couple years ago by moving their family across the country. And he wrote about it in their Christmas letter. And at the last year, that dream failed, and she is still being his cheerleader. You know, men dream. I can remember when Emerson and I were at Wheaton College, so a zillion years ago, and under this area of asking him to talk about his dreams like you did when dating, this is often what we had admired and respected them for, I've often reflected on that time when Emerson and I would be walking along campus, and he would tell me a dream. And I would say, oh, really? And then he had another dream the next week, and I'd go, really? Then he'd say, and we might do this, and I'd say, oh, really? Then we got married, and guess what? He still dreamed. But then I started going, really? Then I'd go, you're kidding, we're not gonna do that, are we? And one day he looked at me and he said, Sarah, we're not gonna do all of this, but just let me dream. And I thought, whoa, that's a way of showing your husband respect, by letting him dream. Hierarchy. A man feels you're appreciating his position as overseer or his desire to protect and provide and even die for you, and therefore feels respected when you really do look up to him for feeling responsible for you. I have seen this in my sons over the years as they, it's just there by God. They realize they're going to need to be responsible for a woman. And it's not like we said to them, you must do this, 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 this. It's just, it's there by God. It's amazing. Next, when you tell him you are deeply touched by the thought that he would die for you. I experienced this just a few years ago when we were doing the conference in California near where our son David was going to school at the time. And he came to the conference, and our daughter Joy was a senior in high school, and she was on her spring break. She stayed back in the room to catch up on the 3-hour jet lag, and we, the three of us, went back to the room after the conference, and we heard the television up loud, but the door was locked, of course, and so we knocked on the door, and she didn't come. Emerson knocked again, and she still didn't come. By this time, Vinny realizes, hey, we're on a ground floor hotel room, and he went around and he noticed the sliding door was open a little bit. He came back and he looked very distressed, and he looked at David and he said, David, I'm going to get the manager. If anybody comes through that door, you nail him. I thought, oh my word, this is serious. And I thought it was very interesting that Emerson didn't ask me to nail him. I think he thought I'd be praying. But what was really interesting for me that day was what I saw in David. He didn't go, no, Dad, no, Dad, don't make me do that. He put his shoulders back, and he said, okay, Dad. And I saw something in my son that I didn't know, that God had created my son to die for a woman. It was the most incredible moment for me. Then another incredible moment was that I realized he was going to die for his sister. Now, if you told me that 10 years earlier, I probably wouldn't have believed you. But it was so neat to see both of those things. But again, the greatest thing was just seeing God's creation there. And it's there by God. Next, when you praise his commitment to bring home the bacon. And I like to say here, whether it's a little bit of bacon or it's a lot of bacon, praise his commitment to bring home that bacon. Under the area of authority, a man feels you are appreciating his power on your behalf, meaning his desire to be strong, to lead, and make decisions, and therefore feels respected when you tell him he's strong as you squeeze his muscle. Ladies, touch your husband's arm right now. I guarantee you every one of them tightened up, right? I also want you to know that I did not stand at the door last night and tell every man that tomorrow when I speak, there's going to be a certain time and I'm going to tell your wife to touch your arm and I want you to tighten up. No, it is there by God and it is symbolic. God has designed them to want to be strong for us. And that's one of the ways that they express it. Now, isn't that interesting? When my boys were 4 and 5, I did not teach them to stand in front of the mirror and go like this. They just started doing it. And you know, as much as there is a weight training for women today, when I touch my daughter's arm, she does not tighten up. But when I touch my son's or Emerson's arm, they tighten up. Go figure. It has to be there by God, because you all did it. When you praise his good decisions and minimize the criticism of the poor ones, women, they know if it's a poor decision, this is a really good time to exercise 1 Peter that says, go quiet, and you can win him without a word by your respectful behavior. Next, when you honor his authority in front of the kids and you differ in private, this shows huge respect. Women, If you have failed in this area, under this area of authority, and you have done this in front of your children, I would say to you, go to your children, whether they're little or whether they have grown. And might I remind you that little children grow up. And you may think they're not being affected, but they are. All you need to do is begin again. I love Lamentations. It says, his compassions are new every morning. Great is his faithfulness. Go to your children, seek their forgiveness. God will honor you, and they are so forgiving. Go to your husband and seek his forgiveness, and he will feel respected. And God will reward you. I can't tell you how that whole issue of men forgetting it and moving on comes into really good play here. You say to your husband, I have been disrespectful. I have undermined your authority in front of our children. Will you forgive me? Again, as Emerson has expressed to us, he's not going to need to talk about it for 3 hours. He'll probably say, you really mean that? Yeah, I do. He's going to forget it, move on. And I am so grateful for that attribute in them. So you should be too. I had a woman come up to me after the conference whose husband was in a very significant ministry position. With tears streaming down her face, she said to me, I really came under conviction in that part of your sharing. And she said, my daughter, who had been married for 3 weeks, was sitting there with her new husband, and my husband was on the other side of me. As soon as the conference was over, I turned to my husband and I sought his forgiveness for undermining his authority. Then I turned to my daughter and I sought her forgiveness. And I only have 2 kids to go. And she was on a mission. She was ready to begin again. So I say to you, begin again. Insight. A man feels you appreciate his perspective and his proposals or his desire to analyze and counsel and therefore feels respected when you thank him for his advice and knowledge. Don't say you're always trying to fix me. See this as there by God. Next, let him fix things and applaud his solution orientation. I loved it in that what we thought was an emergency situation in the hotel in California. I love it when, and I'm sure you do, when they fix something around the house. Now, not every man is a fix-it man, but I'm convinced every man here can change a tire. And if I was along the road, I would want you to change my tire or in my driveway. So I am very concerned today about the amount of male bashing that goes on in the church and outside the church. We have given women license to just bash men, you know, partly because men don't personalize. They laugh it off. Hey, that's an interesting thing. But we have taken such freedom to just keep downplaying the way that God has created them. We are bashing God's creation. And women, as godly women, I would say to you, we need to live a cut above. We need to see this as sin. And if you're in a conversation where men are being bashed, if you cannot change the course of that conversation, I would say to you, leave and don't take part in it. Also, I think it's very interesting that we can have a television show where 4 women can sit and bash men for an hour, but we would never have a television show where there were 4 men bashing women. And we say, equality? I don't think so. Next, tell him up front you need an ear to listen and not a solution, which shows him you value his ability to listen and you aren't making him guess. And he'll feel respected, just as simple as that. Under the area of relationship, a man feels you are appreciating and valuing his partnership and his pastimes or his desire for a shoulder-to-shoulder friendship and thus feels respected when you tell him you like him. A few years ago, Emerson and I just felt there was this tension in my relationship with him, and I couldn't really put my finger on it until one day we were talking, and he looked at me and he said, Sarah, I know you love me, but I do not think you like me. And I thought, oh, Tonto, take your arrow. He was right. I didn't like him. I didn't like my kids. I was just becoming a very negative person in my home. If you ask my friends, tell me about Sarah, most of them, I think, would tell you that I'm pretty positive, I'm pretty upbeat, I see the glass half full instead of half empty. But I was not living that kind of life in my home. I was out to change everyone because I thought if they all changed to be like me, we'd all be happy. And nobody was happy. I was being negative about everything, whether it was every shoe from the front door to the back door, every crumb on the counter, every candy wrapper on the floor, every wet towel on the floor. And I was out to make a difference. And I was making a really bad difference. But I was just, when Emerson said what he said, I thought, Lord, I think you're speaking to my heart. I've been asking you, what is this underlying tension in our relationship? About this time, I was going on a trip with my daughter, and he was going to stay with the two boys. I was going to see my mom. And I asked the Lord to speak to my heart while I was away. And you know, when you ask God to do that, he's really willing to do that if we're willing to listen. And so while I was away, I just continued to pray about this. And the Lord did continue to confirm that this was my issue. And it wasn't anybody else's issue but mine. And I needed to deal with it. You know, I didn't marry Emerson because I said, I hate you, and he said he hated me, and we got married. No, we got married because we were first friends. But I was not being friendly in my home. And so I made a decision that week to come back and to be the person that Emerson had married, not the person that I was right now. So when I got home, I got off the airplane. Emerson was there to meet me. And I said, so how was your time? He said, it was really good. I said, did you miss me? And he said, you know, we had so much fun when you were gone. He said, we played games. We built forts. We ate when we wanted to eat. We made the beds when we wanted to make the beds. I thought they made those beds just before I got off this airplane. But that was okay. But as you noticed, I know you noticed that when I said, did you miss me? He didn't say yes, and he didn't say no. But that was the confirmation, the last confirmation that I needed. I can still see where I was standing in the airport. And I received that from the Lord because, you know what? Life is too short. Life is too short to not live it correctly. A word picture came to me during this time. And the word picture was this, that when I get to heaven, God's probably not going to say to me, so Sarah, were you successful in changing everybody to be like you? No, he's probably going to say, Sarah, how did you change to become like me? And that's my goal in life, is to be like Jesus. And this was a real turning point in my life. It was life-changing. Now, have I ever been negative since then? Of course I've been negative. I go there, but I no longer stay there. I see it as sin, and I get up and move on. What about your son? I bet you see him as a friendly little boy or as a friendly young man. And I'm assuming that you would like your daughter-in-law that's married to him today, or your future daughter-in-law, to be friendly in their home. Next, do recreational activities with him or watch him do them? And might I say, doing these shoulder-to-shoulder activities without always talking about the children? And the reason I say that is because I always thought every time Emerson and I got together, first of all, when two people get together, don't they talk? Isn't that what normal people do? And so I didn't realize, but every time Emerson and I were getting together, we were talking about the children until one day when he said to me, Sarah, do you think we could get together sometime and not always talk about the children? And he said it very lovingly. And I didn't take offense at it because I thought I knew that he loved our kids. I mean, he was a great dad. I mean, he was the only dad in the neighborhood that played with all the kids in the neighborhood and ours. And I mean, every day, the kids in the neighborhood came to our door, not to ask if my children could come out and play, but to ask if Mr. Eggerich could come out and play. So I knew he didn't have anything against our children, but what I realized was that, you know, he does have another life. You know, maybe I should ask him what he dreams about. Hey, we want him to talk. Maybe that would be a good conversation. But then also in this shoulder-to-shoulder relationship, I also learned that maybe we could get together and not talk at all. Oh, now that was a really novel idea for me. But I decided to enter into this discipline a few years ago with my oldest son, Jonathan. As we were going on a family vacation, I was going to be riding in his truck. And I thought, you know what? These boys of mine have now become men. I think this probably would work with them. And so anyway, we had five different people going, three different vehicles, five different schedules, and I was going to be in his truck. Now, I want to interject here that I really wished I had learned this in the fifth grade. That, not when I was in the fifth grade, but when David was in the fifth grade. You see, I have these boys that grew up with a mother who was always asking 20 questions. Like, I was trying to get them to share their feelings. I was trying to get them to come out of themselves. They never quite got as excited about it as I did. And so that's why I say this was really going to be an exciting thing for me to try to enter into this discipline. But the reason I said learning it in the fifth grade was because I was picking David up from school, first day of fifth grade, and I had been homeschooling him for a few years. And I said to him, David, how was your day? And he said, good. I said, what'd you do? Nothing. That was a little disconcerting. Anything exciting happened? And he said, no. Second day, David, how was your day? Good. Anything exciting happened? No. What'd you do? Nothing. Next day, David, how was your day? Good. Fourth day, David, how was your day? Good. Anything, what'd you do? Nothing. Fifth day, David, how was your day? Good. What'd you do? Nothing. And then he turns to me and he goes, Mom, it's the same every day. If anything changes, I'll let you know. That was in the fifth grade. I'm a little slow. I was thinking even recently, he must have, in high school, I'll never forget this one day when he came home, I was trying to get him to talk, and he said, Mom, I used up all my words at school today. In one of those classes, they had talked about men, obviously, not speaking as many words as women. He had used his up. But okay, here we go. But anyway, back to my truck story with my son, Jonathan. I want you to know that miracles still happen. I rode in that truck for 3.5 hours and said nothing, except, should we turn here? Should we get gas? And should we turn on the air conditioning? The reason I can remember is because those were the only three things said in 3.5 hours. When we got to our vacation destination, Jonathan did not turn to me and say, Mother, thank you so much for riding shoulder to shoulder with me and not speaking. That just energized me greatly. No, he didn't say that. But that was one of the best family vacations we ever had. And I just wondered in reflection, had I set the stage for it by just being there with him shoulder to shoulder, not trying to get him into some deep conversation. What I also didn't realize was that it was great preparation for a project that I would do with him just a couple years ago when he bought a little bank foreclosed to work, to fix up and for resale. And he asked me if I would help him in during the week when we were not doing conferences. And you know what? I went into that project with him excited because I knew what he needed. He needed me to be there with him shoulder to shoulder, which I knew would energize him to keep going. I didn't have an agenda other than to just be there with him shoulder to shoulder. And one day, I got this little reward when I was out scraping the garage and the plumber was there who happened to go to our church, and he walked by and he saw me and he was so surprised. And he goes, whoa, Jonathan, you've got your mom here helping. How much does she cost? And he said, she's priceless. Now, he's a man of very few words, so I'll take any ones that I can keep. And that was just, I thought, wow, Lord, that was worth just being there with him shoulder to shoulder. I think I would have been a better mother to sons if I had learned this a lot sooner. But it's never too soon, or never too late to begin again. And it's working now. Another confirmation I had of this was a note that I received from a gal who heard me share this in a women's group one time, and she wrote and said this, one thing you touched on especially spoke to me about having a shoulder-to-shoulder relationship. Often when we drive, Keith does not speak. I have tested him to see how long it would continue, and it can be from Lansing to Flint, Michigan, which is about 45 minutes. I thought she didn't have anything on me. I did it for 3.5 hours. But anyway, I usually end up asking him if he's mad at me or why he's not talking to me. And he says he's not mad, but I think surely he must be. For why wouldn't he talk to me? I'm sure you know the routine, she put in parenthesis. And then I thought to myself, you know what? I used to ask Emerson that. Are you mad at me? No. Anyway, so I conveyed to him what I had learned from you about that. And he said with much relief, see, that's exactly right. Sometimes you need to know you just have a buddy right there beside you. I thought, wow, that was a great, great illustration of what I was learning. But back to recreational activities. Can you do those things with him that I'm sure you did when you were dating? Now, again, we know that there are seasons of life and with the children and things like that. But wouldn't it be neat if ever so often you surprised him and did some of those things that you did back in courtship, whether it's watching a game on TV with him, whether it's riding in the golf cart, even if you don't golf, whether it's watching him in the garage doing woodworking, whether it's sitting in a fishing boat and saying nothing, but just being there with him. These things energize our husbands. I had a woman who came to this conference, and she then shared with me this story. She said, you know, I really didn't think that shoulder-to-shoulder thing was, I don't know, I just didn't know if I bought that. But she said, I decided I was going to test it out. She said, my husband loves to hunt, so I decided I was going to go hunting with him. So when she said, I went to Phil one day and I said, Phil, I'd like to go hunting with you. And I'm sure after she picked Phil up off the floor, he was really excited to go. So she told me her story. She said, we got in the truck. I mean, we took the hunting blind, the deer blind, we put it in the truck, off we went. We arrived at our destination. We got out of the truck, we set up the blind, and we got in it. And we sat there for 2.5 hours. We said nothing. We did nothing. We got nothing. And then we took the blind down, and we walked back to the truck. And on our way back to the truck, Phil turned to me and he goes, Roberta, that was awesome! She's thinking to herself, we said nothing, we did nothing, we got nothing. And it was awesome. She looked at him and said, great. All I can say, women, is it works. It energizes them. Lastly, he feels respected when you encourage time alone for him. It does energize him to reconnect with you later, whether it's hunting, golfing, fishing, woodworking, whatever. For my husband, it was exercise. And when I encouraged him in that area, it just energized him to reconnect with me later. Lastly, and I'm passionate about this, under the area of sexuality. Don't you think that's a pretty good word? Passionate about this? A man feels respected when he knows you appreciate his passions and his pleasure, namely his sexual desires, and therefore feels respected when you initiate periodically. And you might add, they love it. By initiating periodically, they love it. Next, respond more often. And you could add the word positively. They love it. Remember how we want them to have eyes for only us and then we push them away? I'm deeply concerned about the growing number of women that know that men are visually oriented before marriage, but somehow forget that after marriage and don't do their part in making it easy for men, their husbands, to have eyes for only them. I'm reminded of a medical doctor who came to this conference and came up to us afterwards and he said, you know, I work with women all day long who look their very best. And when I come home, my wife is usually in her sweats. She doesn't have any makeup on, her hair's not fixed. And it wasn't like he wanted her to be in her prom dress and sequins or anything like that, but he said, you know, I always notice that when she goes out with her friends, she always looks her best. And he said, it would honor me. I would be honored to come home and to feel like that she wanted to look her best for me. Another concern I have is reflected in an interview with a well-known TV personality whose husband died a few years ago. She was interviewed soon after she began dating, and this is what she said. Her newly acquired comfort with dating has yet to be shared by her fourth grade daughter. She asked me to promise that if I ever got remarried, I wouldn't have sex. And I assured her by saying, oh, don't worry, honey, once people get married, that's when they stop having sex. And then she said, just kidding, I'm just kidding. And I thought to myself, I don't know if she was kidding or not, but it's no joke. It's been said that that the devil does everything he can to get us together before marriage and everything he can to separate us after marriage. I think it's interesting how women still want their emotional needs met after marriage, but somehow lose sight that their husband has a need that they don't have. Again, women, this isn't just about us. He created us male and female. Not wrong, just different. Next, a man feels respected when we let him acknowledge his sexual temptations without shaming him or making him feel shamed. My concern is how many men don't feel the freedom to share these struggles with their wives for fear of being put down. Because we don't struggle in this area, I think many of us don't really understand that God could have been behind this. I mean, really. Women, God is behind it. Just as he made you with emotional need for release through talking, he made your husband with a physiological need for release. just because most men could go a long time without talking, and most of you women could attest to that. Many women could go a long time without sexual intimacy. One day I was thinking how I could best get my point across about this, because I'm deeply burdened that many men are suffering in this area of the relationship. And often not because women do it intentionally, but they just don't realize that somebody could have a need that they don't have. I was grieved one day when a friend came to me who had been in a group of young, godly women, and the issue of sexual intimacy came up. And this woman in the group just said, you know, I just told my husband, I don't have the time, I don't have the energy, and I don't have the desire, so there. I thought, whoa. I didn't always feel like fixing my kids' lunch every day, especially when I wasn't hungry. But I did it because I knew they needed it. I had a doctor of obstetrics and gynecology come up to me after a conference last year and thank me for sharing what I shared. He said, every day of my practice, I have women coming in saying what that young woman said, and I'm telling them what you just said. He said, Sarah, please keep sharing that. Then I told him this story. And he said, Sarah, I want you to tell that story at the conference, because I hadn't been sharing this. And so I tell you this next story by orders of the doctor. I shared with him how I had been for my yearly appointment at my doctor of obstetrics and gynecology, and I was meeting with the nurse practitioner. She asked me what my husband and I did, and I told her, and she said, oh, have I got a story for you. And I met her a couple times, but she was very open, and she just said, usually my husband and I go to visit my parents every week, but last week we did not go. And my mom said, I called my mom and said, well, Mom, we're not coming today. And she said, oh, why not? She said, oh, Mark's in a twit. She goes, well, what's Mark in a twit about? And she goes, well, I suppose it's because we haven't been sexually intimate for 6 or 7 days. And her mother said, Beth, you should be ashamed of yourself. She said, Mother? And then she said, Beth, why would you deprive him of something that takes such a short amount of time and makes him so happy? And then she said, Mother? And then she looked at me and she said, you know what? I don't know anyone happier than my parents. They have been married for 50 years. And I've just never met anybody happier than my mom and dad. And I said, and you know what? Your dad is married to a very wise woman, and I'm so glad she shared her wisdom with you. So, here's my analogy. Women, what if your husband didn't speak to you for 3 days? What if he didn't speak to you for 3 weeks? What if he didn't speak to you for 3 months? What if he didn't speak to you for 3 years? I think you would think that was abominable, and I think you see my point here, and even research shows that this is a huge issue. So women, if you're looking for a ministry or just wanting to bring pleasure to your husband, I'm sure he would say, go for it. And then I just want to insert here, what about your sons? They've got the same needs that your husband does. They're created in the image of God. How do you want your daughter-in-law that's married to them today, or your future daughter-in-law, to treat your son? Ask yourself that question. I think it's just the most challenging thing. As we've gone through this, hopefully you see, again, neither one of us is wrong. We're just different. This is God's creation. This is God's doing. And remember, Ephesians 5:33, it's a command. It's not an option. There's no neutrality. We either will do it or we won't do it. And remember, who makes the first move? The one who sees himself or herself as the most mature. I dare you to be the one to make the first move. And trust me, God will honor you as you do. Thank you.